Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 120, Meal Planning. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking and getting in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things, all that kind of stuff. Today on the show, I'm welcoming back a special guest, and we have a great conversation on meal planning and supermarkets and all that kind of stuff. But before I get into that, I want to just mention a couple of things housekeeping-wise really quickly. First of all, if you haven't already, please, please feel free to jump over to Facebook, check out the show's Facebook page, The Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, have a growing, small but mighty group of awesome listeners in there. We're sharing recipes, talking about food, having a lot of fun over there. You can find it most easily by just heading over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group, and it will pop you over there. It's a closed group, so you'll just have to make a request to join, but I'm happy to let you in so you can join in on some of the fun there. Also, if you'd rather just talk to me directly, you can always send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. And you can find me on the regular Facebook page as well, and Twitter and everything like that. You can find all of that information over on the website and particularly in the show notes for this episode at kitchencounterpodcast.com/120. And that'll take you to the show notes for today and get you links to all the social media and all that good kind of stuff. All right, enough housekeeping because I want to get into this conversation. Today on the show, back to have a chat with me about meal planning, grocery shopping, putting things together from your pantry, all that sort of stuff, is Leah McGrath. Now, Leah is one of my favorite people online. She's very active on social media. She has very thoughtful opinions and insights when it comes to food, nutrition, agricultural practices, all that kind of stuff. Leah is a registered dietitian, and she is actually a corporate dietitian for a chain of supermarkets based out of North Carolina called Ingles Markets. If you're in that area, I'm sure you're very familiar with Ingles and what they do. Leah's been a registered dietitian with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics since 1996, and she'll talk about this a little bit in her intro when we start the conversation, but she completed her internship with the U.S. Army at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. She's also had experience working with the South Carolina Department of Public Health, becoming the WIC nutrition director for that district, and she's been at Ingles since 2000, where she served as their corporate dietitian. Leah also hosts a great podcast in conjunction with Ingles Markets. She writes a great blog, and as I said before, she's very active on social media. So I will put links to all that stuff, if you're interested in connecting with her, on the show notes to today's episode. So what do we talk about? Well, this was spurred from a Twitter chat event that I participated in that Leah ran a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about meal planning. I thought it would make a good conversation to put onto the podcast. So this isn't exactly a structured the ABCs of how to do meal planning, but we cover a lot of ground. We talk a lot about spending time in the supermarket, grocery shopping, making lists, that sort of a thing. And I think we come up with a few nuggets of wisdom that you'll find interesting throughout this conversation. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Leah McGrath. Hey, Leah. Well, thank you so much for sitting down and talking about Family Meals Month and meal planning. This is going to be a good conversation, I think.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks so much, Roger.
And folks will have heard your intro, your bio already, but why don't you just, for the sake of being probably more accurate than I will be, can you just give us a thumbnail sketch? I know you're a registered dietitian, but what else should people absolutely know about you as we get started here?
Sure. I have been, for the majority of my career, the past 18 years, I've been a retail or supermarket dietitian for a chain called Ingles Markets based near Asheville, North Carolina, and we have 200 stores in 6 states. But I started my career as a dietitian in the Army, and I spent about 4 years as an active duty officer and dietitian in the Army, and then I went into public health for a short time as a WIC and nutrition director. But I think right now my focus has really been on talking to consumers, customers about farming and agriculture, and trying to allay some of their fears about food and what's on their plate. So that's kind of where I feel like I've been spending a lot of time lately.
And I love that because that's also a subject near and dear to my heart. And I should mention, for a lot of my listeners, you won't be a new voice. You were actually on the show last summer. It's been that long already, but you came on and it doesn't seem like that long. But we did an episode called Food Sanity, and we kind of address some things like labeling of food in the supermarket, organic and non-organic produce, and a whole host of other things. So I will put a link to that in the show notes. That was episode 91. But I'll mention right now that this will be episode 120. So if anybody wants the links and anything I mention or Leah mentions in this episode, I'll put them at kitchencounterpodcast.com/120. And then folks can get to the show notes. So, all right, Leah, let's jump into this then. So it's we had this idea because I was on a Twitter chat with you the other day for something called Family Meals Month, which happens to be September. We're smack dab in the middle of it right now. Admission time, I don't know a whole lot about Family Meals Month other than it's a hashtag and it's happening now. Can you kind of fill me in on that?
Well, there is an organization called FMI, which stands for Food Marketing Institute, and it's sort of the umbrella organization for a lot of retailers, a lot of supermarkets. And a few years ago, they had this, and they started this initiative called to make September National Family Meals Month and really bring retailers across the United States, supermarkets across the United States, sort of together around a virtual table to promote the idea of the benefits of eating more meals at home with your family. And, you know, I want to be clear, when we talk about like family meals, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to sit down with, in a traditional family, mom, dad, kids. I mean, your family may be your significant other, it may be some of your best friends, it may be female friends, it may be a sports team. The key is that you're sitting around a table and eating a meal, enjoying a meal together. So that's sort of the underpinnings of what's National Family Meals Month is. And if you look for that hashtag, Family Meals Month, you'll see it on social media, on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook.
Okay, cool. That's excellent. So let's talk personally just for a second here. So my home situation here is I'm married and I have a first grader here at home. So meal planning for us is pretty important, especially this time of year with school kicking off, right? I mean, time becomes very scarce really fast when summer ends. And so for us, sure, meal planning, especially during the week, is important. And we can talk a little bit later on about some ins and outs of actual meal planning and maybe what we do or what we best practices or whatever. Do you meal plan yourself, or, you know, what's kind of your general philosophy on planning for food at home?
Yeah. You know, in a perfect world, Roger, I would meal plan. But in all honesty, because we're empty nesters now, we don't as much as we used to. We have a little bit more flexible ability to be a little bit more flexible because we don't have the after school soccer practice, and we don't have the band practice, and we don't have the basketball practice and the football practice, mm-hmm, and all the other things that we went through throughout middle school and high school, which made time so precious. So we can be a little bit more spontaneous and creative with meals now than we used to be.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting because sort of my family's philosophy to meal planning might be an overstatement. So I would say we're more like dinner planners, and we kind of know what we're going to do for lunch or breakfast, but we don't plan out like specific meals. We tend to during the week for dinner, but lunch, you know, we buy the staples and then we can throw lunches together or whatever. But we try to take it a little less formally. I know some folks get really into it. I mean, they've got spreadsheets and every ingredient for every meal down to the timing, exactly, you know, is worked out. I can't do that. It's just not in my nature.
No.
But
I think you brought up a really good point, Roger, already. It's that you have some staples around that make it easier for you to sort of say, okay, you've got these things in the fridge or the pantry or the freezer, and I know that I can put this combination together to make a meal. And some people aren't quite as comfortable. So I think that they really need that sort of structure, to know, what they're going to make and how they're going to make it. So I think a lot depends on how comfortable you are and who's doing the cooking and how much time they have.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a totally fair statement. So let's talk about staples for a second, since we've jumped right into that. You know, what do you think, in your opinion? I'll share a few of mine, but you know, kind of what are your staples? What do you never run out of at home?
Well, let's see. Starting in the fridge, we always have milk, eggs, a plain Greek yogurt, some sort of like a hard cheese, like a Parmesan cheese is pretty standard. Of course, stuff like butter. But those would probably be the standards in the fridge. In the pantry, there's always some canned or packaged tuna. There's always rice. There's always pasta. Let's see, what else? Some canned beans a lot of times too. In the freezer, we usually have maybe some frozen fish fillets that we can kind of thaw pretty quickly. Some frozen shrimp oftentimes too is a good one. Well, and I probably should say something like pasta sauce and salsa. Condiments really, I think people a lot of times forget to mention condiments, but you know, a few strategic condiments can really help you change a meal, you know, whether you're talking about hot sauces or chutneys or salsas or spaghetti sauce, all those Worcestershire sauce, all those things can really help you change a meal, the taste of a meal, pretty dramatically. Fresh herbs, I always have some growing.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And because I think the idea is those things last, right? They're not going to go bad right away in your pantry. So then you can focus your grocery shopping on the more perishable things like your proteins, your meats, your fishes, fresh fishes, right. Whatever. Your vegetables, produce, obviously, right. Which don't last. Or your fruits, yeah, your produce, those sorts of things. Yeah, for us, one of the techniques we've kind of gotten into, and I mentioned this on the Twitter chat, and this is a bit of a tangent, but I think it relates. We have kind of this master list of dishes we like to make, and we can generally bust out pretty easily. We don't really need to follow recipes too much. We might have a recipe for them. But, you know, we look at this when we meal plan, and we say, okay, out of this, I don't know, 100 meals that we've got on this list, you know, what do we want to make this week? But what we've figured out saves us a lot of time and mistake energy, I guess is a way to put it, is things like you mentioned, like the rice, canned tomatoes, canned beans. We always have like an extra set of those things in our pantry, and yet we will still go buy them at the store. So what we do is when we bring them home, we rotate. So we'll take the stuff out of the pantry and use them and put the stuff we just bought in, so it makes sure those things don't expire. But what we find is we always forget to put things down on our shopping list, right? Oh, dang it. Why didn't I put canned tomatoes down or whatever? But I know I've got them in the pantry. And I'm safe that week, for example. So that's just one thing we try to do.
Exactly. That's great. A great suggestion.
What do you do, or what do you recommend to folks you talk to about meal planning as far as the actual logistics of doing it? I'm a pen and paper kind of a person. That's the way our family does it. It's just easy and flexible, and you know, I don't have to learn how to use it. But I know apps and websites are also popular. Do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Yeah, I think I know you said that in the Twitter chat that you're still a kind of a pencil and paper kind of guy. And I would probably lean towards that as well. I think whatever works for you, some people really like having everything on their smartphone or on their laptop so that they can visualize it and then download it to their phone. What I used to often say is that you start with your ideas to plan around protein, and it doesn't have to be animal protein. Your because but protein is is normally you're going to be the key, the starting point for your meal, whether you're talking about beans or tofu or chicken or fish or pork or eggs, whatever, that's your starting point. And then you kind of figure out what direction do you want that to go in. So if you have that protein, whatever it is, animal or plant-based protein, then you can figure out what do you want to have with it to complement it to make your meal. And that's a good place to start for people. So, you know, when I would sit down with people one-on-one, I'd say, okay, why don't we do, think about having chicken, fish, you know, your beans, and you space those out for your different dinners, your dinner meals. And then how do you want to have those prepared? Do you want Italian? Do you want it to be Mexican? Do you want it stir fry? You know, do you want it with specific vegetables from your garden? So, but I think that's often a good place to start.
I like that too, because again, it's something we like to do, because proteins typically are maybe take the most time to prepare, the most complicated, or sure, sometimes the most expensive, right? And you want to make sure you're not wasting or you're getting right, the most out of them. So when we do that, we do just what you suggest. We plan kind of around the proteins, but we look at it and we say, okay, so for example, let's just talk about chicken. So a whole chicken, a whole fryer chicken, is a lot less expensive than buying boneless, skinless chicken breast, or right, a cut-up fryer, right, for that matter. So we might look at that and say, okay, if I were to buy a chicken, and there's only three of us, so everybody's mileage is going to vary on how many people they're trying to feed, et cetera. But we would say, you know, okay, so we can get a couple of meals out of a chicken. You know, a fryer chicken's going to cost you like $5 or $6, I think, in the store. It's not that much, right?
Yeah.
So we'll use that as a protein. We'll say, okay, so now there's two meals we can get for one protein. I can roast a chicken. I can make two meals out of that. Maybe we make you know, chicken and rice one night, and then the next night we make wraps using chicken as the main protein.
We've got
two meals knocked out with one protein. And I think when you plan your meals ahead of time, it allows you to do things like that. That's something you can't really do when you're shooting from the hip. You know, just every night you're going like, I'm going to run to the store and get something for dinner. What should I get? You're going to spend more money and you're going to waste a lot more time. Right?
Oh, yeah. And who has time to go to the store every night? You know, I think that whole like cook once, eat twice concept is so helpful. And when, you know, when my stepson had this really hectic schedule and we were always trying to coordinate who's going to drive him, who's going to pick him up, you know, putting Boston pork butt roast in the crock pot and knowing, okay, we can have that with, you know, roasted potatoes and roasted carrots for dinner this night, and then the rest of it, maybe we'll have it in a quesadilla later on in the week. We can freeze it and have it in the quesadilla later on in the week. But that was a huge time saver to think, like you're saying, to think, how can I take that one protein, whether it's a whole chicken or a roast or a pot of beans or a stew, and how can I make that into more than one meal?
And you know what's funny about that? Like, and I suspect a lot of people are the same way, but I am terrible, absolutely terrible. My whole family is at eating leftovers. We always say, I don't know why. We always say we're going to do it. We always end up like, I don't really want, you know, spaghetti again or whatever. But this is this method though of cooking a protein for different meals kind of hacks my brain. To me, it's not leftovers. It's a different meal. So it's kind of a way I tricked myself into eating leftovers, but not actually eating the same meal twice. So I can beat that whole subject to death.
I have a dietetic intern now, and she was telling me, you know, once her mom would have a clean out the fridge meal, and she would basically, anything that was left over would end up in a taco or a tortilla.
I think that's awesome.
She said sometimes it's really kind of different tasting, but we didn't ask questions. You know, it was just, you know, you never quite knew how they were going to taste, but somehow it always kind of works. So if you put enough salsa or hot sauce on it, I guess it will work.
I have saved more than one questionable meal with a few dashes of Tabasco sauce. I'll say that.
Exactly. There you go. Yep.
And you know what's fun too, on that whole idea of like shop, I call it shopping your pantry or shopping your fridge.
Yeah.
if you're so inclined, they can make fun ways to break out of ruts, right? I mean, it's like almost you can make yourself like right. a little, your own personal Chopped challenge or something. It's like, here's what I've got.
Yes.
What can I make? It's,
you know,
to your point, you never know what you might end up with. You might have a new family favorite. You might not, but
exactly.
You gotta try it.
And, you know, we're trying to be more conscious about food waste. And, you know, it's sad to throw out food that's perfectly, how can you repurpose it, refashion it so that your family will enjoy it? You know, putting it in, can you use pieces of meat in a soup or stew? Can you put those potatoes into a cold potato salad, make a cold potato salad? So yeah, I think, you know, much better to try and figure out how you can use it rather than how you can throw it, rather than having to throw it out.
Okay, so let's talk for a second about the supermarket experience when it comes to meal planning and shopping, because I actually do get questions about this, and I have my own opinion, but I'm one of those weird people that actually like going to the grocery store and doing the shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, I just enjoy it, because I love to see what's there, and I don't know, it's almost like a Zen thing for me. It's, I don't know, I'm weird.
Does your wife start texting you and we go, I thought you were going to be back a half an hour ago?
Actually, I try to be pretty efficient about it. But, and that's the other thing. So my wife and I, we just kind of wing it. It's like, do you want to do the shopping today or do you want me to? It's just kind of, you know, we alternate. We don't have any rigid plans or routines, I guess I should say. But maybe I should start a career as like a personal shopper. Maybe that's my calling.
There you go. There you go.
So I've had questions talking about supermarket, grocery store, whatever you want to call it. Like, how do you get in and out of the store in a reasonable amount of time? I have some thoughts on this, but I wanted to kind of get your take, because you are a supermarket dietitian, right? So you're a supermarket expert.
Right.
Like, what, there's probably a retail answer. Like, probably the supermarkets don't want you in and out super fast because they want you to buy stuff.
Exactly.
But what's the consumer perspective?
Well, I think that, you know, one thing my husband always does insist on is we make up the shopping list based on where the items are in the store. So he will, it's never like a random list. The list is always kind of fashioned. So these are items that are on the right-hand side of the store, and then we're moving down the list to items that are on the left-hand side of the store. Because, you know, everybody's had that experience when you get through your list and then you realize, oh, no, I forgot something, and you have to go all the way across the store again or hunt for it in the store. So I think one thing you can do if you're trying to get in and out, be more efficient with your time, is have a shopping list. And like, as you said, don't shoot from the hip. Have a shopping list so that you make good use of your time, and set up the shopping list as the store is set up so that you have your produce. There are some ones that you can find like that. You know, what produce items do you need? What meat items do you need? What canned or frozen items do you need? And that's going to really help you use your time more efficiently. I think having kids, shopping with kids can be really challenging. And that I was behind a mom the other day, and she had two little ones in a cart, and it was taking all of her willpower and self-control to get through the store without like having an outburst, because they were, I mean, grabbing things from the shelves. I want, you know. So I think that can be really tough on mom and dad when they're shopping with little ones who you can't really get them involved in the shopping experience because they're too little, but they're at the same time they're grabbing items or wandering away from you or something like that. So those would be a couple of tips.
Yeah, my son, we've learned a long time ago, and we have the luxury of one of us can go to the store and stay, the other one can stay home with our son. I know not all families have that option, but he's at the age now where he likes to drive the cart, and I cannot focus on anything else. No, because he's terrible. He's like running into people, and he's like cutting corners, like tearing end caps off, and I'm like, It's like I have pressure issues. I'm just like, listen, Dad will just go to the store. I'll bring a treat or something, you know?
Right, right. We have these cute little carts where kids can actually kind of act. They look like a car. So there's a buggy attached to a car that you can put the kid in, and it's like they're driving a car.
Yeah,
so
I think those are
that
cool.
That seems to keep them pretty occupied, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The way we do our list is, I'm a pen and paper guy. I don't like the apps. I've also never really found a list that's like pre-printed that I really like. So we typically will just write out our own list. And we try to strike a balance between super detailed and just totally random. So we organize it not by aisles, but by type. Like we'll say, here's the produce department. Here's the dry goods department. Here's the frozen. Here's the dairy. Here's whatever. And we kind of organize it that way. And, you know, we shop at the same store all the time, so we know it fairly well. So for us, it's just we know we just go up in each aisle and we can just grab stuff as we need it, right? But I think sometimes people get bogged down, especially if they're not comfortable with the recipes they're cooking, perhaps, or they're not comfortable with where they're at, or they're just not comfortable shopping, is they get super detailed with their list. And I know that if you get too detailed with your list, it can like double your shopping time because you're hunting for the exact thing in the exact spot it should be. You know, you get too hung up on looking at every product that's on the shelf. I mean, to me, we talked about labels and food in the past, but I mean, I know like the two or three brands of things that I like now, right? So I can just go through and I'll just grab whatever's on sale of those brands. I don't have to inspect everything. Because one listener in particular listener wrote to me and he said, I can never get out of the store in less than an hour. How do I do that? It's like, I don't know. I mean, you just kind of got to get good at it. You know, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
And of course, it depends on how much you're buying.
You know, I think there's a couple of things that come to mind when you're saying that. First of all, what happens when the store does a reset? I mean, I get some really angry phone calls from people when supermarkets like ours reset shelves. So what that basically means is maybe we have what are called planograms, and that's basically how the shelf is supposed to look. So the people stocking the shelf know that on the top shelf, these cans and so many rows of cans and so on. Well, sometimes they'll shift that around, and oh boy, does that for people, especially for some reason, and I'm not trying to be sexist, this really angers men when you do a reset and things are not where they expect them to be.
You know, so just to comment on that real quick, it's totally funny you bring that up because that was in the back of my mind. So yeah, we shop at it's called Fred Meyer. It's a Kroger. It's like a superstore, right? They've got everything from food to produce to motor oil and, you know, gardening stuff, right? And, you know, once every 2 or 3 years, it seems like they do like a major overhaul. And honestly, you're right. Sure. It doesn't anger me, but I am totally out of sorts for like a day or two because I'm in the store for like three times longer than I need to be. And I'm just like, where is the rice? You know, it's like, it should be here,
exactly.
But it's not.
Exactly.
No. So that's an occupational hazard of grocery shopping.
Yes. The other thing I think is, you know, sometimes it's not a bad idea to maybe allow yourself, like you were saying, how you really enjoy shopping sometimes. And, you know, sometimes if we're so focused on only getting certain items, like the tried and true canned beans that we like or the chips or whatever, we may miss some really interesting new products. So sometimes it's maybe worth it to say what's new, and most retailers will have some way of identifying those products for you, either what's called a new item tag, but you know, you might just find something that's a better buy monetarily or nutritionally. You are willing to occasionally take a little extra time and look around, so you never know.
And, you know, that's an interesting thought, too, because one of the things I tell folks if they're in a kind of a rut and they just don't know what to do with their food is especially if they shop at the same store all the time, it's like, have you tried shopping at a completely different store? Like, not a different store, same brand, but like go to a totally different supermarket. Shockingly, there are a lot of products out there, and you know, your typical supermarket can't carry all of them, right? So I always, you know, once or twice right. a year, we make it a point to just shop somewhere else, you know, just because I think it's good consumer practice to like make sure you're getting the best deals you can and you like the variety, and you know, just to, so you know how good you have it at the store you like. And I always find I always find stuff that I'm like, I didn't know Campbell's made that, or you know, or whatever it is. So it's kind of a fun way just to get new ideas and break out of your rut, I think. So I think that's really good advice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but of course we may be the outliers, Roger, because we really like grocery shopping to begin with. So,
well, let me get your opinion on something. So I hear a lot of people, and I think this is done mostly, I don't know if this actually works, but to minimize grocery costs. I know several people that will shop at three or four different stores on their designated shopping day. So they'll go to store A because the meat is really good there. And then they'll stop at store B because right. all the dry goods are super cheap. And then they'll go to store C because they always have the produce they're looking for, just for an example.
Right.
That would drive me crazy, but I'm not disparaging those people that do it because I get it. Do you do that? Or, I mean, I didn't even know if that's a question, but I know a lot of people that do that.
I know some, I wouldn't say a lot. What I tell people when I hear that, I as a supermarket dietitian, I would say, you know what? Here's what I would do. I would go to the store where you buy the bulk of items. You know, the majority of your items are at this store, and tell them, bring them the five or six items that you're having to go elsewhere to buy, you know, and say, you know, I have to make a special trip to this store just because you don't have these items. And, you know, if they're a brand item, you know, if they're a private label or store item, then that's not going to work. But if it's a brand item, like, you know, I buy everything at this store, but this other store has this brand of yogurt that I really like. So I make a special trip, you know, across the street, down the street, down across the town to buy this brand of yogurt and their products. I would go back to that store A and say, here are the items that I wish you carried, and see how they might be responding those. Stuff like meat, you might not be able to do that if they have a certain quality meat, or they sort of have certain kinds of meat or seafood that you really like. But with brand name items, I think it's worth a try. Otherwise, I feel like that is so hard because you're spending so much time. If people have that amount of time to do that, I mean, I don't personally have the time to go to three different places to get my groceries. I mean, no, I can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like whatever works for you, if that works for you in your life and it's, you enjoy doing that or it's not a problem. I mean, go nuts, whatever. But
sure.
So what haven't we talked about when it comes to meal planning and Family Meals Month? I feel like we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things too, Roger, is that I know in this era of, in this age of social media where everybody is so fixated on taking pictures of their meals when they're at home or when they're out, I think it's really helpful to remind people that your food doesn't have to be perfect, right? And sometimes the best meals are not the prettiest meals, and it's okay if your meal doesn't turn out looking like that image that you saw on Facebook or in a magazine or in a cookbook, because they spent a lot of time food styling that, and you know, they had a professional with tweezers making that product, that dish, look perfect. So I think we need to remember that good food doesn't have to be perfect looking.
Yeah, agreed. I tell people that all the time. It's like, I'm a terrible food photographer. But, you know, I know like food bloggers, they have really great images, right? And, you know, it's, you know, they make like four or five versions sometimes. And, you know, they're, it's not, nobody eats food that looks like that. I don't, I'm sorry.
Right.
But, if you do, you know, you're a rare talents, but the vast majority of home cooks, they're not making food that's worthy of the cover of Bon Appetit, for sure.
Right, and the most important thing is with Family Meals Month is to sit down and enjoy the food, get people involved in helping cook and cleaning up, and have a conversation. Turn off your devices, turn off the television, and just relax. You know, just take it easy, take some time, enjoy the food, and just enjoy your family or your friends or whoever around the table with you.
I think that's awesome. And words to live by. I totally agree with you. So thank you for sharing that sentiment. I think that's, if you get nothing else out of this conversation, I think that might be the most important piece.
Yeah. Thanks, Roger.
Well, I hope you found that conversation with Leah interesting and useful. Like I said, Leah is great. She's got an excellent attitude when it comes to food, shopping, nutrition, and feeding your family. As I mentioned at the beginning, if you want to get in touch with Leah, please head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/120 for the show notes, and I will link Leah up for her social media and her website over at Ingles. Well, that does it for another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Once again, thank you so much for listening. And, you know, if you're so inclined, please go check out the Facebook group over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. We have some fun monthly cooking challenges, interesting questions. People are posting cool food photographs and recipes. It's a lot of fun. Also, remember to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, wherever, so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. I've got some really fun ones lined up. We're going to be talking about pizza very soon, so I know that's a popular topic and you don't want to miss that. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening. I'm Roger from the Kitchen Counter Podcast, and until next time, happy cooking.
Thanks for listening. Happy cooking.